Attention all groups. This is Admiral Akbar with your Armada advice. When a squadron with heavy is at an unobstructed distance one of another squadron, that squadron is still engaged with the heavy squadron. While a fighter group can move away from and or fire at ships while engaged with a heavy squadron, they do still count as engaged, so effects that require that status are still triggered. For example, a squadron with grit that is engaged with one regular and one heavy squadron cannot move away, as it is still engaged with both. Assume attack coordinates, and may the Force be with you.
At last we will deal with these rebels, scum. You may fire when ready.
Welcome, Commanders, to the 9th episode of Fire When Ready, a Star Wars Armada podcast. I'm Jim. My Armada League is over, and the Imperial Navy has achieved victory over the upstart rebellion. The rebels took an early lead, but a few crushing defeats put the rebels on the back foot, and they were driven from the system without achieving their goal of destroying a manufacturing satellite. More importantly, everyone had fun, and I'm looking to run another one once store championship season wraps up. I'll be posting the scenarios I came up with on the site for everyone to peruse very soon. If there is a next league, it'll pick up where this one left off, with the rebels on the run and trying to stay one step ahead of the pursuing Imperial fleet. On the store championship front, I've played in two now. I took a very close second in the first one at around the table, losing by an MOV tiebreaker. I had three very close, very tight matches, though, winning all three and going 6-9-7, the first win being over the eventual tournament winner. The second tournament took place at Games and Gizmos in Redmond, where I took first place. The games I played were brutal slugfests, the horrible highlight being in the second round, where my MC-80, having just slowed down to speed 1 to avoid ramming a Gladiator, got an assault proton crit of comm noise that dropped it to speed 0, with an ISD closing in and my command stack having nothing but engineering dials. For the last three rounds, the MC-80 and ISD traded punches right in the face, whittling each other down until the sixth round, where the ISD finally crushed through my constantly moving and regenerating shields and detonated the MC-80, only to have his triumph cut short as my MC-30 scout frigates double-arced him and blew the ISD out of space. It was a crazy end to an amazing game. I'm looking forward to seeing folks in Tacoma for the regionals. This week's ship is the Imperial Raider, the smallest and fastest ship they have. It can top out the speed chart at 4, and while it doesn't get the sweet Tokyo Drift double click at the end of it like a CR-90, it gets a single click at every joint but the first. Its maneuverability is best at speed 2, where it gets double clicks at each joint, allowing it to make nice 90-degree turns. It has 4 hull and 2 shields in each facing, which sounds pretty nice on paper. However, it only has a brace and 2 evades, so you're going to have to do some maneuvering or some engineering tokens to get the most out of the shields. With only 2 engineering points, though, moving shields or regenerating 1 is all you're going to do. It comes in 2 varieties, the 1 and the slightly more expensive and longer range focused 2. For firepower, it sports 4 dice out of the front arc, 2 blue and 2 black on the 1, 3 blue and 1 black on the 2. Both had the same 1 blue, 1 black out the side, and 1 blue in the rear, but differ again in anti-squadron. While both throw 2 dice at fighters, the 1 is 2 black and the longer range 2 is 1 blue, 1 black. The 1 also has the ordnance upgrade slot, while the 2 has the ion cannon slot. The Raider has 2 main roles it can fill, an anti-squadron ship or a skirmisher. There's also a variant of each of these roles that can be done, a fire-and-forget missile and a small escort carrier. Since the missile style just runs basically naked, I'm not going to touch on it at all here, but I'll be getting into it when I discuss tactics. The carrier I'll talk about after going through the upgrades for the 2 main versions, but one thing that I want to stress is that the Raider is the cheapest ship the Imperials have, and loading it up with upgrades diminishes that advantage for it, so taking one should really mean a lot of hard choices on which upgrades to take. More than one or two in a title should be absolutely 100% justified in your mind as to how they will relate to your strategy. In the officer slot, there's only really one choice for either role, and that's Admiral Montferrat. Since the raider is going to be traveling fast and needs all the help it can get not to be destroyed, being obstructed on the approach is pretty handy. It's also a decent place to put Director Issard to take advantage of her sweet ability, but other than those two, between having a command stat of one and lackluster firepower, the other options just aren't worth it. The weapons team has a good upgrade for the anti-squadron role in Ruthless Strategists. Only take it if you're running alongside some squadrons of your own, though, especially if you're taking high hit point things like bombers and YV-666s. Note, though, that even though TIE Advanced have high HP, you shouldn't deal the strategist damage to them, as with Escort, they'll be taking enough damage without the raider's help. Either build benefits from ordnance experts, as there's black dice in both the anti-ship and anti-squadron battery to give rerolls to, so that's a top pick, but only on the Raider 1. The Raider 2 doesn't have enough black dice on it to make it worth it, unless you're going anti-squadron and want to get a good chance of a hit. Sensor teams are a decent choice to make sure you get accuracies from your blue dice. In offensive retrofits, there's only good upgrades for an anti-squadron build, that being either point defense reroutes or quad laser turrets. Which you take will depend on the title and role you'll be using your raider in against fighters, which I'll talk about in the strategy section, but for now, just know that you should never take PDRs on a Raider 1, since it only rolls black anti-squadron dice. The Raider 1 has ordnance upgrades on it, which should only be taken on an anti-ship build, and there's only one I can recommend in all situations, and that's Assault Proton Torpedoes. They're cheap, and they bypass shields, so the somewhat lackluster firepower of the raider doesn't matter so much. Plus, they can be used twice if you get a double arc. Rapid reload and expanded launchers are both expensive for the raider, so if you have a plan to use them, they should only ever be paired with ordnance experts, and that's it. In fact, with any of these, you should also take experts. Just always take experts. Assault concussion missiles are a decent choice as well for a couple more points than the APTs, and if you're going for a raider swarm, having a bunch of them stripping the shields off of a larger target before a heavier hitter demolishes it is an idea that gives me a little thrill. Raider 2s have ion cannons, and I don't think they're great buys. The two that I might take are the cheaper ones, leading shots to try for more consistent damage on attacks, plus they would pull double duty with the anti-squadron attack, and then ion cannon batteries in order to get another shield hit in. The front arc only has slightly better than 50-50, about 57% really, to get a crit, so not spending too many points on that gamble appeals to me. If you're more of a risk taker though, having the raider use an overload pulse or an NK-7s to soften up a target could be a game changer off of a crit. Just like the expensive ordnance upgrades, though, you shouldn't be taking much of anything else with those. Titles should only ever be taken on anti-squadron builds, and I'm going to discuss those in a bit in the tactics session. Finally, I said I'd touch on the idea of a carrier build for the raider to surprise your opponent. For this, you'll want to look at expanded hangar bays and possibly flight controllers. What's more important to this build is what fighters you're going to be taking. You're either going to want a TIE Advanced or the Instigator title to lock down any intercepting enemy squadrons, and then take a couple of TIE Bombers to send out on the attack. You'll also probably want a Jumpmaster to give enemy fighters heavy so the bombers can get clear. Alternately, you can take a wing of TIE Interceptors or plane fighters, along with flight controllers, and use the Raider and its fighter wing to intercept the enemy's fighters with squadron commands to give your wing a little boost from the controllers. Howl Runner will work well in this type of list, and you'll probably want to use the Impetuous title to fire twice on enemy squadrons out of one arc. Either way, you shouldn't take boosted comms, not just because it cuts your squadron stat down to one, but because with the raider's speed and maneuverability, you should never be out of range to give the order to whatever fighters need it. Okay, now for the part on how to use it. I'm not going to lie to you, listeners. The Raider is an odd duck. Its black dice make you think it wants to get close to use them, but its defensive abilities are best at longer range. With only a single, easily locked down brace, all it will take is one strong hit to blast your Raider out of space once you've closed. However, it has middling to no firepower at any other range. So what's the deal? Well, here's a couple of ideas to try to get the most out of your Raider. First of all, you can use it for anti-squadron duties, and any anti-ship use is a bonus. We'll talk more about that in a little bit here, but we know that the Raider isn't going to take more than two shots from a larger vessel. So one option is to just use it like a missile, going in guns blazing and trying to do as much damage as possible before inevitably succumbing. While there may be the occasional time that strategy is the right one, such as ramming your Raider down the front arc of an MC-80 to stall its movement and do that sweet direct hull damage from overlapping, this tactic is a waste of the 50-ish points you've spent. One method I've enjoyed is to use it as a blade of wounds for another, more important vessel. Fly your Raider next to something like Demolisher as it makes its attack run, or even an ISD. Make sure it's about the same range band so your opponent can't say, "Well, that other ship is still at long range, but the Raider's at medium, and I should be able to smoke it and then deal with the other next round." That's an easy choice to make, and you want to maximize the agony here. This tactic works really well against ships with a lot of firepower, where they can one-shot a Raider, but maybe need to soften up the other threat a little bit. If your opponent is having to choose whether to take fire from a fully powered Raider, but a weakened other threat, or a full-strength other threat, but no Raider, you've done your job right. Plus, with the right maneuvering, you might even manage to obstruct the shot to your other ship, and your Raider bodyguard is even more likely to blare, "I will always love you," as it burns, to allow Demolisher to bring the pain. Another tactic requires some tricky speed manipulation and should be attempted only if you have activation advantage. What that means is that you have initiative and more ships than your opponent, so you can both activate before them and after them. Using this, you can activate your Raider last to get it into close range, and since no enemy ships will be activating afterwards, you don't need to worry about getting destroyed with a return volley. Next turn, you activate the Raider first, launching your attack and then running it out to a safe distance. This is far more difficult than it sounds on a Raider, as it's very easy to be just outside of range or not able to get quite clear. You may also want to activate a different ship first to get some shields back, which will ruin this plan. But if you can pull it off, it's a good tactic to use. Just be sure to get a bunch of practice games in with it first. Naturally, this tactic works best in a list with Ozzel, but Tarkin can pull it off as well by giving out a nav token to augment the nav order. Now finally, we get to what the Raider is, according to FFG, meant to do. Be an anti-squadron platform. Raiders are very good at firing at squadrons, especially for their size, due to their two-dice attacks. And yes, they can lock down squadrons on their own with the Instigator title. The problem with using them in this role is once again in their defense token layout. Against fighters, the brace is basically useless as most of them only roll one die. Occasionally, you'll see a two-dice attack from a fighter or a black hit crit that you can knock down to one, but mostly, once you get into close range, the Raider is just going to eat those single hits on the side that's facing the squadrons. That might be manageable against a non-bomber wing with a little luck, but if the squadron group is a ship-killing one, that Raider will last one, maybe two turns. Don't let that get you too down, though. One or two turns may be all it takes to keep those bombers from killing a more key ship of yours and make all the difference in a fight. There's also a couple of ways to make the Raider more effective in its role. First, you need to decide if it's going to be acting solo in its fighter fighting, or if it'll have some squadrons of its own tagging along. If it's alone, you're going to want the Instigator title to keep enemy squadrons from moving off. Once you get into range, you're also going to want to drop to speed 2, so that you can circle the squadrons with those nice 90-degree turns, so have tokens and orders ready for that as necessary. The optimal raider for this tactic is the 1, since you're going to be holding steady at distance 1 as much as possible. However, this won't be killing any named squadrons with a scatter defense, so if you're anticipating some of those and you have the points, jump up to the 2 for a blue die you might lock down their defense with. With a 1, Ordnance Experts is going to work well to maximize your damage, and you can also look at quad laser turrets for counter. If you're going ace hunting with a 2, though, you might look at taking point defense reroute for an extra chance at that accuracy result, or dropping Ordnance Experts for a sensor team to guarantee it. The other way is to have some squadrons of its own tagging along. I mentioned using it as a surprise carrier, and this can easily fit into that idea. For this tactic, you'll want to take the Impetuous title and at least one tie advanced. Use the Raider 1 and Ordnance Experts, drop to speed 2, and let your tie lock down the enemy squadrons while you blast 2 rerollable barrages out the side facing the fighters you're circling. Another variant that guarantees damage instead of the rerolls is to take Ruthless Strategists instead of the Experts and plink damage off of your escort, but if you're going to go that route, I'd advise taking either another advanced or a nice cheap tie bomber to put the friendly damage onto. As I've said, a single advanced will be taking enough heat from the engaged squadrons and won't need your help in getting wiped out. Put a Jumpmaster in for intel to combine this with the surprise carrier idea so that the advanced can lock down a squadron and allow the raider to circle strafe enemy squadrons while a squadron order lets the bombers leap clear to hit their intended target. Command-wise, the raider is going to run lots of navigation orders to start with. Being only Command 1, it has an advantage that it can drop a squadron order as a carrier or a concentrate fire order if it's being used as a ship killer. The only other general guidelines I would mention is that if it's a ship killer, engineering orders probably aren't going to do it much good, as it's likely going to be dead in one hit, and if it isn't, moving some shields around isn't going to save it from the next big hit. So just keep concentrating fire or navigating to keep out of their big arcs or keep them in yours. If it's anti-squadron, concentrate fire only affects one attack out of the hopefully several shots you're going to take in a turn, but engineering orders will keep your facing shield strong against the nickel and diming attacks made in return. Commanders that work well with raiders are obviously Ozzel, due to his speed-changing gimmicks, and Screed can give them a situational boost with their black dice attacks. Mahdi gives them an extra hull point, which could make all the difference between turning a one-shot kill into two shots, but it's kind of situational. Vader gives good synergy with the raider, as anti-ship loadouts probably aren't going to be using evades once they close, and you might not even use the brace against squadrons, so those can be used to gain additional rerolls. Being only Command 1 means they may not get much use out of Tarkin, though, unless you make a habit of burning through those tokens every turn. I've said the Raider is an odd duck, and it really is, as it doesn't fit into a lot of preconceived roles for Imperial ships. It's fast, it puts out good damage at close range, but it's really easy to kill at that range, too. It can do serious damage against squadrons, but may not be able to hold out against larger groups of them or bombers. Plus, it's still vulnerable to taking a shot from a passing enemy ship while it's trying to wipe out those squadrons. It takes a lot of practice to get good mileage out of a raider, as it isn't a simple ship, and I don't pretend to have all the answers or one simple trick to get the most out of your raider. Rebel players hate him! It's a ship I'm not willing to give up on, though, and I'll keep you all posted as I keep trying it out. After the break, we're slowing down and launching torpedoes with the B-Wing.
When Jim wants to play Armada, he heads down to Round the Table in Lynnwood, Washington. They have board games, a friendly and helpful staff, food, ice cream, and a rotating selection of beer and ciders, so you can loosen up and fly casual. Thursdays are X-Wing and Armada night, so come on down for a glass and a game and say hello. Find out more at www.rttgamepub.com.
We're back, and it's time to take up with Wave 1's other Rebel bomber, the B-Wing. Much like the Raider, The B-Wing is a tricky squadron to master. It's the most expensive stock Wave 1 squadron at 14 points, and while it has a solid 5 HP to weather attacks and can fend off squadrons with 3 blue dice, its speed of 2 makes it unlikely to get into a fight, instead being pinned way out of position by much faster interceptors. Those HP and dogfighting dice will likely see them through an engagement, but they'll probably be left behind by the time they do. If they can get to bombing range, they can put the hurt into a ship with their blue and black bomber complement. And while they are tricky, B-Wings are one of the most straightforward squadrons to use. They're bombers, and that's pretty much it. They don't have any other special rules to worry about, and while they can mix it up with other fighters, as I've said, that's not their strength, as their slow speed isn't going to help them much with engaging the enemy. The real trick is getting the most out of your B-Wings as they chug along. I've said that squadrons should be thought of as movable mines, and that's never more true than it is with the B-Wing. With a squadron that slow, the best way to use them is to make the enemy come to you. They work very well in objectives that make your opponent move in a predictable fashion. Contested outpost or fire lanes will have them coming to your Bs to take their licks, and hyperspace assault and fleet ambush can put your B-Wings right in close as well. While they don't get any help from any of the red objectives, the right positioning of minefields could help funnel your opponent into a waiting bee's nest, and planting them on an intel sweep location gives your enemy the choice of either eating those bomber hits or diverting to another location. B-Wings are also an excellent complement to the MC-80. While its independence title is an obvious choice to bump them up to speed 4 for a round to get them into a better position, the B-Wing can also just run as a close escort. It matches speed with the fastest of the standard MC-80s, so it won't get left behind, and if an enemy bomber wing comes in close, Bs aren't heavy like Y-Wings, so they can tie up those bombers handily. More so than any other Wave 1 fighter, they can additionally provide support against an enemy ship deciding to ram the front of the MC-80 to stop it, as the B-Wings can then bring their ship-killing proficiency to bear against what is likely a nimble, flimsier ship. B-Wings don't pair well with most other squadrons, though. Their slower speed means that if you plugged in an X-Wing for escort duty, you're slowing the X's down and losing out on some of their interception ability. While you can take any other fighters in a list with B-Wings, don't expect to use them all together due to that speed difference, unless you're rocking that independence title. The only fighter that it really pairs well with, and they fit like hand in glove, is the stock YT-1300. It's also speed 2, and has escort and counter, so it can keep the Bs protected while they move into position. Add in an HWK to give intel out, which is the one time you won't feel guilty about slowing a ship down to move with the B-Wings, and slap independence on an MC-80, and you can keep intercepting fighters tied up while overcoming the slow speed disadvantage and let the B-Wings wreak havoc on nearby ships. In general, I like to take B-Wings in a pair at the absolute minimum. 3 is preferred, and beyond that is up to you. A pair is perfect for MC-80 escort duty, and if I'm sending them out with YT-1300s, I try to run one YT for every 2 Bs to make sure enemy fighters will stay locked down for a good long while, and the B-Wings can do their job. The B-Wing ace is Kian Farlander, who clocks in at 20 points. For those 6 extra points, you get 2 brace tokens and change out a blue anti-ship die for a black one. Having those 2 black dice can be important, as his special ability is that if he attacks a hull zone on a ship that has no shields, he can re-roll any of his attack dice and try for that sweet hit-crit result on both dice. Due to still having only 2 speed and lacking rogue, Kian doesn't tend to fit in very well with squadrons other than B-Wings. He's still an excellent ace for the B-Wing positive situations I just mentioned earlier. Just keep in mind that you're going to want to activate him last so that the other Bs can try to drop a ship's shields before he takes his shot. He's also very good in the MC-80 escort role, where he should be placed just ahead of, but out of the flight path of, the 80. There he'll either be run over by a ramming enemy ship and then placed in a good position, or should be in range 1 for the squadron phase if it misses him, instead of being activated with a squadron order. That way, your MC-80 can fire with its weaker front arc and drop a shield facing, maybe even put some damage on, before Kian launches his re-rollable torpedoes to finish the job. Of course, situations will vary when you're actually on the battlefield, and sending in a 2 black dice bomber with a squadron order against a ship isn't going to be a bad thing ever. B-wings are slow, and getting the best use out of them means finding ways to get around that disadvantage. But if you can plan around it, B-wings will perform very well in every situation a squadron can be put in. They have lots of HP, good dogfighting ability, and of course, are excellent in attacking ships. Just make sure your opponent either has to go to them or can't get away, and you're all set for good times. And that wraps us up for this episode. Next time, we're going to talk about the only ship we haven't covered yet, my new Wave 2 favorite, the Rebel MC-30. And instead of jumping into the Wave 2 squadrons, I'm going to start talking about objectives, and we're going to start with the red assault cards. Until then, you worry about those fighters, and I'll worry about the tower. Permission to end the show, Admiral?
It's a wrap!
Fire when ready. A Star Wars Armada podcast can be found at www.firewhenreadypodcast.com. Talk to me online on Twitter as @ArmadaJim or by email at jim@firewhenreadypodcast.com. All celebrity voices impersonated, all rights to the spoken content of this podcast are reserved.